Welcome to Cabronas y Chiconas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Sam from Lost Boys. I know this is like a throwback, but if you remember this classic vampire movie from the 80s called Lost Boys, there's a main character called Sam who has like a Rob Lowe poster just like casually in the background of his like freaking room, and he's like shirtless, and I'm just like, okay, I see it for you, boo. You're probably bisexual. I'm into this. So shout out to Lost Boys. Shout out to Sam probably being bisexual.
Now I might actually have to watch that movie.
It's really good though. Like everyone's in it. It's so good.
What up, cabrona?
What's poppin', chingona? Happy Halloween.
Oh my god. I feel like it's really on brand for our episode to come out on Halloween. I like that. We're I like that spooky. A lot.
You like it a lot? It's on brand. I mean, for you, I'm terrified of scary things, but
yeah.
That's awesome.
I also feel like Halloween is gay culture. Is it just me?
It really is though. Like the gays come out for Halloween in droves, like preparing their costume like the entire fucking year. I am like a bad gay because I don't care that much. Like
I'm working on Halloween, so today I'm gonna be kind of bummed, but it's fine. It's okay.
Shout out to all the people working on Halloween today. Get your money. I hope you're wearing a funny costume, and I hope you get lots of candy and get to fuck with people today, just in a very legal way.
God, yeah.
Yeah.
I won't go into like my job or anything, but yeah, I get to see some interesting stuff every day. Not every day.
Oh, that's true. Days. That's lit. Yeah. I want pictures. I want fucking pictures. I can say because it's Halloween. I dressed as Sofia Petrillo from The Golden Girls because I'm short and I'm cranky. So I was like, hey, it's perfect. Like, I got my wig, I got my glasses, and I got my one-liners. I'm saying them to everyone today. If you got something to say to me, I got a bitchy one-liner for you. But yeah, so are you dressing up today?
No. And by today, I mean 3 days from now. No. I mean, I guess I kind of am. Yeah, in my uniform.
You're dressing up as an employee. That's it. That's what matters.
I go to and wardrobe, then, so it's like a whole thing.
See? It's technically an outfit, and look, that's all that matters. I had two costumes this year, actually. Maybe I'm not a bad gay dude. Maybe I get my gay card back.
Yeah, you were fucking painting, and Glow. Bob Ross. Euphoria who? Like
what? Yes, I'm we got dying. It from Euphoria.
That's amazing.
Like, I was like, I don't want to dress up as Rue because I don't want to wear a suit. Like, that's expensive, even for, like, costume or cosplay. And I was like, fuck it. I'll just be the painting. You be Bob Ross. We initially were going to go with, I was going to be a tree / Scarlett Johansson. So people asked me, I would just wear a name badge that says Scarlett Johansson. I'd be like, no, I'm Scarlett Johansson. And they're like, what are you? No, I'm your tree? No, I'm Scarlett Johansson. See, I had it all planned, but I couldn't find a tree outfit. But here we go.
Yeah, I can see that being difficult.
Yeah, so but yeah, happy Halloween, y'all. And if you don't celebrate this day like me, you just like to dress up and be goofy, then shout out to anybody who's actually scared of Halloween like me, because I'm a little bitch.
Were you afraid of, you know, like scary stories, or like what, why are you so scared of this stuff now? Like, what's the history there?
Like, I didn't grow up on it. Like, I always thought, like, and it's not even, like, my mom never told us, like, scary stories. We never did anything for Halloween other than, like, dress up. And I wasn't allowed to dress up as a lot of different things until I got older. I was, like, a witch for, like, 5 years. I was a clown when I was, like, 2, because that's the outfit that gets recycled in Mexican households. You know, like, you're a clown, you're a witch, and that's it. You're not allowed to be too many demonic things, right? but I think I was, like, a Yellow Ranger one time, and that was dope as fuck. Yeah, dude, that's why she's my favorite. I gotta whip out that picture today. I gotta ask my mom if she can find it.
That's so awesome. You didn't even know what Trini was gonna end up being in the iconic Power Rangers 2017 remake.
Hey, the gayest, the best. I mean, I love Trini. Like, that was my favorite character growing up, and I had that little like flip Power Ranger toy. But yeah, I never celebrated Halloween like that. Like, I just watched Charlie Brown's pumpkin thing, and that was it. Like, I didn't really my mom didn't grow up telling us stories like that, and I always thought it was abnormal. I never watched scary movies because I think they're just usually poorly acted and have really, really predictable plot lines. Like, I always know what's going to happen, and that's what bothers me about, like, horror or any kind of, like, scary movies, is I see the plot coming from a mile away.
I mean, as you know, I have completely different opinions about that. I love horror film. I grew up on Chucky and, like, pretty much any scary movie that came on, like, the non-cable channels. I also have, like...
Shout out UPN.
Yeah. And then I also have memories of, like, going to, like, the super rich neighborhoods in, like, Dallas, where they would, like, decorate their houses like crazy and give the good candy out. So that was a good time. And I don't feel bad about going to somebody else's neighborhood because, you know, wealth is a disease. I don't know.
I mean, I couldn't trick-or-treat in my neighborhood. It was scary as fuck. Like, we had to go
nobody
to...
Nobody gave candy in my neighborhood. Like, that wasn't same. A thing. Yeah.
It was like, don't step on my door. You probably get shot. Like, or there were like drug houses. So it's like, nah, like that's the trap house. Like, you can't go knock on that door.
Yeah, exactly.
We used to go in North Oak Cliff, where it was nice back in the 90s, because like not a lot of brown people live there, and that's the only place we went. We went to North Oak Cliff, which was popping.
Oh, we straight up went to Highland Park.
I heard the legend of Highland Park in Halloween is they give you like actual bars of candy, like the full bar.
I mean, not always, but there are some houses that were pretty bomb.
They just didn't give a fuck.
It's mostly, like, it was the decorations that I remember. Like, it was actually, like, for a kid, it was actually scary to go up to that door to get that candy. Like, it was a reward to get that big-ass candy because they were, like brave. Scary. Like, the houses were decorated, like, horrendous. Well, like, you know, in a good way, horrendously.
Yeah, like, it's fun, right? When you're a little kid, like, you're like, ooh, who's this, like... People really get into Halloween, and I guess if, like, we were giving out candy in a neighborhood like that, I would actually decorate, because it's fun, like, to fuck with little kids and, like, give them candy. Yeah,
I guess so.
They were just, like, drinking. Every time I remember, adults would just be, like, drinking beer on Halloween and just giving us candy, and, like, whatever, chilling on their porch.
Fun. Yeah, but no, same as you, I didn't grow up with any, like... La Llorona was, like, an afterthought, really. Like, I didn't learn about it until I was older.
From other people, right?
From, like, the media, you know?
Oh,
like,
damn. Yeah.
Not even from, like, my family or anything. But, yeah.
I heard it from my friends. That's all. Yeah. You know, all my friends grew up like that.
Oh, yeah. I think maybe me too. I don't know. I just know that it wasn't from my family.
It's that Catholic shit. Yeah. Religion, it's like, no, you don't get to learn enough. That. We're going to go to church. Like, nah, I'm good. Like,
yeah,
super Gucci on that part. And I mean, another thing we don't do is we don't do Dia de los Muertos either. Neither of us.
No, I didn't grow up with that particular cultural thing.
I think it's maybe like a northern Mexico kind of thing. Like, we're both from like the northern part of it. So I think maybe it's like common.
Maybe we don't do it. And it's also like we grew up in the States, right? Like, we didn't grow up in Mexico. So who knows? I don't know what my family does in Mexico during that time, because I only ever went in the summer and the winter. So who knows?
On break. My mom said that the only thing they did again was just go to like the cemetery and like eat food and like party, basically. Like, have a good time at their family member's grave and like eat food, have lunch. That's it. But nice. Not like, yeah.
You know what never I thought knew. Was a scary movie, but it was not a scary movie in the traditional sense? Parasite.
Oh, Parasite.
Yeah.
He has like a tradition of kind of like genre blending. Like, it's never just one thing. That movie was like four different genres in one, which I actually really liked.
Yeah, and I think like most prominently, I see it as like a family story with a theme of like wealth disparity. Like, that's how I would best describe it. But Parasite, not to get into it too much, we just want to say, like, go watch it immediately. Like, it's probably not playing in too many theaters, but it's one of my favorite like movies to have seen in a long time, and I thought it was really, really well done. And I think we're gonna cover it one day, and we want to cover it with spoilers because there's a lot to talk about. So watch it.
You kind of can't cover a movie like that without spoiling it.
Right, because you're not even going to, like...
You can't have a conversation.
Not even going to scratch the surface.
No. Right? No, it was so good. I recommend it for anyone. Go watch it. All the fucking tweets about it are like, don't watch the trailer, don't learn anything about it, just go watch it.
That's what I did. I'm so proud.
I mean, I saw the trailer on it, but the trailer doesn't give anything away. You have no idea what it's about. Watching the trailer isn't bad. You can do that. It doesn't give anything away. But that's kind of annoying, because I guess I'll get into other stuff when we finally cover it, because there are some things about my experience watching it with people who obviously didn't even know what the fuck they were watching. Like, really didn't know what they were watching. Which can be a problem. Yeah. But anyways.
So this is our first time recording in a while. The episodes that have come out were recorded before, like, in August and September. So this is kind of like us catching up a little bit, which we did last week on Patreon. But, you know, I'm excited that we're back. And if you're excited that we're back, leave us a review on iTunes, because that really helps.
5 stars.
5 estrellas. And our sponsor for this episode is us and our our merch. So head over to our Teespring if you want to check out. We got a bunch of new merch, both in Concha style and Cafecito style. And we have hoodies, shirts, we have mugs, we have everything. And that link is on our website. That link is on the bio to our Instagram at CYC Podcast. And we'll just give it to you if you DM us, you know, whatever. But
yeah, just let us know if you want to buy something. That's our sponsor. Yeah, our sponsor is us. Shout out to Maite for setting that up. Y'all go buy these shirts. Go buy these sweaters. Go buy your crush a sweater. Go buy your family a t-shirt. It's getting chilly. It's getting cold in Texas. It's getting rainy. You know, time to buy them hoodies to stay warm with your crush. Just saying. It's a good gift. The holidays are coming up. Come get your gifts. That's all I'm saying.
And you know who got shirts? They got like Concha shirts, actually. Mm-hmm. Was one of my best friends, Cynthia, and her fiance Kenneth, who in 2 days are getting married.
Oh, so shit. Shout out to them.
Yeah, so I just want to say congratulations, and in a couple of days you guys are going to be like tied for life or whatever it is.
Tied for life. That sounds like terrible.
No, it doesn't. I mean,
tied like with a rope, like, I don't know about that one. But yeah, no, that's super cool. Shout out to Cynthia. Shout out to your OG Cynthia.
Yeah. So happy marriage. And in a couple of days, I'll see you there.
Congrats, kids. So what are we talking about today? I'm really, really excited.
We're talking about a lot. Like, we discussed this on our Patreon episode, but we want to cover 4 total things, because there's so much variety in horror these days, or at least I think so.
Yeah,
and definitely. We want to recommend something for everybody, for the Cynthias out there who don't necessarily love horror, and for the fanatics like me. So we'll get into that.
No, yeah, I'm super hyped, because this is for you. I got some family friendly choices in here, you know, for me. Would you like me to go first with my family-friendly, not-so-horror?
All right, yeah, let's start with the kids one. I want to hear about it. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, so, y'all, I recently watched a lovely, lovely, lovely animated film, a Mexican animated film called La Leyenda de La Llorona. It came out in 2011, and you guessed it, it's about La Llorona.
What?
Wow!
The legend of it?
Oh my goodness, what? It's actually quite different from all of the tales we've ever heard, probably, like, you know, at our prima's house, or like in our anyone's house that's any wherever you first heard it, we just know of it. It's this folklore that's always been with us, and they tell it a little bit different. Anyways, this story follows Kika, Beto, y Leo San Juan.
Cute.
It's adorable. It's all in Spanish. It does come in subtitles, so you can watch this. If you have no knowledge of La Llorona, you could watch this and actually get really informed. If you didn't know anything about it, you can learn all about it. It's informative in that way. It takes place in 1807 in the city of Puebla. Kika and Beto are like trick-or-treating on Halloween, and Beto goes missing. La Llorona gets Beto, her brother, and for the rest of the movie, you're watching as Kika and Leo San Juan go on a journey to look for her brother and all the lost children that La Llorona has taken. If you don't know anything about the legend of La Llorona, it basically always centers around a woman who has lost her children by the river, by the water, by the lake. There's always a body of water. In this story, La Llorona has lost her children, two boys. They didn't drown in this one. They just kind of floated away and died in the river. So it's a little bit different.
That's just like a nice way of saying that they drowned, you know?
Yeah, like she killed him. Yeah, because the legend that we always hear is that she drowned her own children, her two sons, out of like heartbreak. Either some stories she's getting cheated on by her baby daddy, some stories she got left by her baby daddy, and in this story she just her house was on fire, she got distracted, and the kids like floated away down the river and died. And wow. She never found their bodies, though, and like a lot of this movie is actually about kind of like a lot of this movie is about loss. It's about her trying to get this kind of, I don't know, what's the correct word for that? Closure. That is the fucking word. She's looking for closure this whole movie, and you kind of, I don't feel bad for this one because she didn't murder her children. Like, she just kind of like had a lot going on. She was a single mom, she's struggling, you know. So this is definitely the kids' versions where she doesn't murder them, and she also doesn't murder the children that she like finds. She just keeps them safe and asleep, and she collects them because she's always looking for her children. One of the really cool things I liked about this movie is that if you know nothing about Mexican culture, a lot of it is like kind of just hilarious and funny. There's characters, there's like a character that's a fresa, and she talks like a fresa. She's blonde. No, she's a redhead. She's white passing, and everyone else isn't. And they make a lot of references to like current day Mexican culture. There's a scene where they're on the Xochimilco. Xochimilco, I think it's the lake, right?
You're asking the wrong person. Me, right. Geography.
No. Geography in Mexico. Anyways, they're on Xochimilco, and you know how in Xochimilco there's always like boat rides and people eating like fajitas and tacos and like being loud and rowdy. There's a scene in there where they include that, like where there's just like a family eating tacos being really, really loud, and it's supposed to be in 1907 or 1807, and all of a sudden you just hear like rancheras blasting and people eating tacos on this boat by, and it's really just funny. Because a lot of it is, like, very, like, all the humor is, like, Mexican humor. And I can't place that, and I can't say that in any other way other than when you watch it, you'll understand. Like, a lot of these jokes are very inside Mexican culture. Like, the slang they're using is, like, homegirl de fresa is calling everyone else, like, a naco and shit like that. And I'm just like, what the fuck? And she's like, que oso, o sea, like there's just so yeah. many things there where I'm like, ooh, this is really real to like modern day Mexican culture. And I just thought that was a really cute spin. Kika is like the main character, and she has the most annoying voice, but she's also just like a badass little kid who's not scared of shit. So this movie, although it does take a different take on La Llorona, which is a folklore that's been around for, like, I think 4 centuries at this point now, and they're saying that the origins even come from, like, the Aztecs, and they said that even the Europeans have, like, the British have their own version of La Llorona. They call her something else. Jenny Greenteeth. That's what they call her.
Jenny Greenteeth.
Yeah, dude. Like, there's, like, a little
less frightening.
Right? A little less, but I mean, same thing, same concept. Like, her kids died or she killed them or something like that. She takes children by the water. Like, that's been the common theme. Even the Aztecs have, like, two goddesses that are, like, similar to who La Llorona is and, you know, whatever, the goddess of the lake or the river or whatever. But it goes back so far. And, I mean, do you remember the first time you heard about La Llorona?
God, no. I haven't the slightest clue.
It's just like something that's been part of our culture for so long. We can't even place it. Like, I don't know. It's everyone has like a version of this. I think Sandra Cisneros has like Woman Hollering Creek. There's so many versions out there of La Llorona. And I think this one's a special version just because it's adorable. You can watch this with your little kids, which with your little nephews, with all the little babies around you. It's not that scary. I mean, it's not scary, y'all. It's for children. But still, there's some parts in there where I was like a little thrown. It was a little scary. Anyways, there's even like a dude speaking Catalan. And I thought that was hilarious because no one understood what the fuck he was saying. Neither did I. But yeah, I give that movie like 5 fucking stars. The animation isn't like Disney. It's not a Disney production. It's not like a huge studio in the United States. It's a studio in Mexico made by Mexican people. Directed by a guy named Alberto. I didn't say his name. I feel so bad because his name is Beto. Alberto Rodriguez. So shout out to him. And I give this movie 5 stars. Watch this with all the little babies that you know. I love it. I want to watch it again. It's adorable. They have one about the momias in Guanajuato.
Mm.
So, I mean, if you don't know shit about Mexican culture, it's good. It's a good refresher. It's a good intro. It's adorable. So,
where did you recommend watch this?
I actually watched it on Amazon Prime. You can just rent it.
Oh, okay, cool.
You can just Google it and watch it. Anywhere online, just stream it.
It is pretty hard to find things other than, like, Coco to, like, watch with my niece and nephew that are like about Mexican culture. So I'm excited to know about this. This is a good idea for when I go and visit them.
Yeah, you can watch the one about the momias too. And this came out way before Coco. This came out in 2011. So
right,
fuck that. This is more original. Like, but I mean, and it feels less dirty because, you know, it's not giving Disney money. So I liked it. Speaking of legends, what do you got for us?
So actually, speaking of kids, I ended up watching this film called, in English it's called Tigers in the Dark, in Spanish it's called Vuelven. You know how they always they'd be not even close to like what the original title is, like it's called Vuelven as in they return or returned or whatever.
Like the bootlegs they used to sell in Mexico where like they changed the name to like the Avengers, it'd be like the 4 like white dudes, like they'd name it something really stupid.
Los Cuatro Vatos.
Los Cuatro Vatos, and it'd be like the Avengers, and you're like, what the fuck? And you're like, shout out to it being like 20 pesos, I'm buying that shit today.
I will say that Tigers in the Dark are, oh my god, why do I keep calling it Tigers in the Dark?
Tigers in the Dark.
Tigers are not afraid. What is wrong with me?
Tigres del Dark. That's what I'm going to call it.
Los Tigres del Dark. I don't know.
Del Darks.
So it's called Tigers Are Not Afraid, which is a way better title for it, actually. Vuelven is kind of simple, and I wouldn't say is that representative of the content. Tigers Are Not Afraid was written and directed by Isa Lopez. It's very refreshing, I think, to have a woman at the helm of one of these films.
What?
She's really experienced as a writer and a director, especially as a writer. And she has like a lot of work under her belt that you guys can check out if you want to. From the looks of it, though, she doesn't get the credit she deserves for all the work she's done. Even though I will say, like, unlike a lot of very talented women who are out there directing and writing, she has gotten a solid amount of work. They just haven't been the biggest pictures.
I've been hearing about this for like a year.
Yeah. Oh, but only in like certain circles, you know what I mean? And so currently you can watch it, supposedly it's exclusively on Shudder, which you can subscribe through Amazon Prime. But I think it's also available through Pantaya if you have that. And but let me get into it. So the vibe of this film is like Guillermo del Toro, but instead of Spanish war stories, it's like a Mexican drug war environment.
Whoa, what?
Yeah.
Oh,
did that
shit
throw you off? Okay.
You did.
Yeah, that's the kind of environment that they're in, and it's about a bunch of little brown kids, basically. The magical parts of it, they're not as prominent as say Pan's Labyrinth, where the line is like so blurred that you're a little unsure about what was real. It's pretty obvious that these children like are actually going through a horrible trauma, and they're actually going through these things and coping with them in these magical realism ways. And the film doesn't shy away from showing the very real violence in these stories. So the main character is a little girl named Estrella. She's played by Paola Lara. And a very close secondary character is El Shine. They call him Shine. Yeah, he's played by Juan Ramon Lopez. they're both little kids and they're both incredibly talented. I have to take off my hat in particular for Juan because he acted his ass off. He like plays this kid who had to grow up way too fast, and Shine is sort of like a leader of this group of orphan kids, which consists of Tuxi, Pop, and Morro. And Morro doesn't speak anymore. He's the youngest one. He's a little, like a little boy. And he doesn't speak after something really terrible happened to them. All of them are orphaned. They like live together in like abandoned places in Mexico.
And shit.
Shine is like their provider. He gets some food. I mean, most of it, everything that he gets for them is stolen, but he gets them fed.
Shit, this is like kind of dark.
It's extremely dark. Yeah. So both Shine and Estrella's lives were both basically struck with tragedy because of the cartel. I think the other ones too, but them specifically, they're kind of connected. Like, it came from the same place. And in this film, the main villain would probably be this guy named Caco and El Chino. They're cartel members who are rumored to also be into Satanism.
And the fuck?
And I mean, Caco's iPhone password is 6666, so he's like super hardcore.
Whoa. Dane.
Yeah. I don't want to go like super far into the film because it's pretty easily spoiled and we don't really have that much time because we're covering so many shows. But I did enjoy it for what it was. It's like not the most impressive horror story that I've seen, but I think it's super worthwhile watching considering it's different than any like cartel centered movies that you've seen. Like, other cartel movies are like basically like porn for people who like drug wars and violence, yeah, and all that crazy shit. Whereas this right here is like, you know, it's like real horror, like for real people, for real children. So it's kind of maybe the polar opposite of what you just covered because it's like, it's about children, but it's about like a horrid reality that is out there for some kids because of certain wars that are rampaging through the world, and in this particular case from Mexico.
I
gotta say, I don't know, I haven't thought of what to rate it. I just watched it today. I think like as I reflect on it and what it's about, it being about like these kids and their superb acting, like really gains it a lot of points for me because in general I have higher expectations for horror film. So for that reason, I would say that I probably would only give it like one cafecito.
Okay.
But I think it's worth watching just for like the sake of representation, right? Like, we don't get a lot of Mexican made films like this, especially not written and directed by women, with about like the like some horrible realities of really real kids and just superb acting. That's the main thing that I guess I got out of it.
And it's, like, really hard to do movies about, like, cartel without falling into all those, you know, tropes. So, that's what kind of maybe put me off, because I knew it was about that, but I was like, I don't really want to watch a cartel movie right now. It's not because it's not the reality of a lot of, you know,
they're romanticized sometimes.
Yeah, it's gross. It's really gross.
Yeah, and then this one, it's completely subverting that trope.
Oh, and that's so fucking rare. Like, we never get that. Even in Mexico, it's glorified in this way. That's just fucking gross. And it's, I don't know, I'm tired of it. But that's a whole different point of view, and that's one we definitely need out there. So I'm going to watch it. I mean, shout out to Shudder. Shout out to right. me getting it just to watch a different movie. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to keep it. Fuck it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so one cafecito. Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds interesting. I mean, we got to give it a try, and I don't want to watch more fucking Sicarios ever again.
Right.
Bullshit. Especially with all the real shit happening right now in Mexico, and we just happened in Sinaloa. Like, I don't know, dude. My parents went to Mexico, and they were telling me how they couldn't even, like, drive around at night, and how they weren't even supposed to be out at night, even in groups. Like, it was just like, no, you don't do that. Like, because they're by the border, so it was fucking scary. I don't know. But moving on to a different border. Border lines, personalities. I don't know. There's a lot of...
Is that the transition?
The transition. My shitty transition. Yeah. I tried, y'all. Anyways, speaking of that, speaking of borderlines, I'm gonna move into the perfection. Before I get into it, if you don't want spoilers for the perfection, I don't know what to tell you. Don't listen to this part of the podcast because there's no way to talk about it without kind of spoiling some part of it, because it's so fucking ridiculous. I'm not going to get into the whole thing, of course. The Perfection came out actually in 2018, but I didn't see it until this year because of Twitter. I was hyped off Twitter. You know, it was one of those things where it was like no context spoilers. And it was like, I didn't know what the fuck I was getting into. It stars Allison Williams. You'll know her from Get Out. You'll know her from Girls. She plays Charlotte, a cellist?
I don't know.
That sounds wrong. I don't know. I'm going to keep saying it. She plays the cello. And Logan Browning, who plays Lizzie, who is also a cellist. And it's cool because they kind of play characters that maybe each other's foil. I don't know, that might be right, that might be wrong. I'm not gonna go with that. I'm just talking out of my ass right now because I'm trying to make sense of this crazy movie. The story opens on Miss Charlotte, and as it progresses, I don't even know. It's a fucking, you're diving headfirst into one movie, and then you're coming out watching three other movies. It is both a revenge film, a fucking body horror film, a fucking psychological thriller. And did I already say if it's a revenge film? Yeah, I'm pretty sure. It's four movies in one, and it has way too many plot twists that kind of kill the movie for me, but also completely keep me enthralled. There was no point in this movie that I felt like I should stop watching, which is really crazy for a movie that I'm not going to rate that high. Only because...
Oh, shit.
I mean, he shouldn't have done so many damn plot twists. I think maybe a good director can pull off a plot twist, like, let's say, like, Old Boy. That's a really good plot twist. The Handmaiden, that's an amazing plot twist. They knew what they were fucking doing. They're like master directors, because if you give us more than one plot twist, it's really, we don't know what the fuck we're watching anymore. So let me try to somehow give you the beginning of the plot, because it's not going to make any sense after that. Charlotte gets invited to be a judge at a cello competition in China. There, she meets Miss Lovely Lizzie, and this is why we're talking about it. It gets real gay really fast, and
spoiler alert,
it gets gay. And they, instead of you thinking they're gonna hate each other, they end up not being rivals, they end up being really, really friendly. And as the movie goes on, their friendship changes and grows and develops into about three other different things. And it ended up reminding me of Sucker Punch at the end, as far as the revenge plot point, bad bitches doing shit. And I guess that's part of the twist. I don't want to give away anymore. What did you think about this? I actually want your thoughts on this since you recommended it.
Oh, for sure. I like that there was... I don't know. I thought it was pretty unexpected.
You never know what's going to happen.
No, not for one fucking second. And it does lead, it led me to a point. I just remember thinking because I watched this on purpose because I was like, maybe I'll cover it one day. And I was thinking while watching it, like, I'm never covering this. Like, I can't believe they went with this trope. And I was so mad. And then flipped it on me. And I was like, oh,
it just got interesting. I mean, yeah. It's been interesting. It was so good.
Yeah,
in a bad way.
Yeah, it's like, it really just kind of depends, because it's pretty gory.
Yeah,
during some parts, and like it can be pretty gruesome, but it's also like low key. I don't know, like shames like these this white guy. I was like,
which we're into. That's the genre we love the most, is like killing evil white guys, like as long as they're evil, you know. That was cool.
Yeah, there were parts of this that I remember like really enjoying, but it was a lot. I'm not gonna like disagree with it being a lot, but it's just, it's like you were saying earlier, the reason that you're sometimes weren't into horror film was because they were so predictable. And this was not predictable.
Not predictable.
Could not have predicted that, like, with 1,000 trailers.
And that was the best part of it. Honestly, that's why I don't want to talk about any of the twists, but, like, that's the best part of it, is that I was thrown off because I was like, this writing really went left and then it came back and then it left and it came back again. So if you go in, just go in not knowing anything about The Perfection, and you're actually, same thing with Parasite, you're actually better off. You're going to enjoy it because it's one of those movies you can't look away. You're just, that's masterful writing. It's just like, really masterful directors wouldn't do that many times to people. Like, it's like, okay, bro, you got carried away here. We get it. It's like four movies in one. I appreciate that. But at the same time, I guess it worked. I didn't know what the fuck was going to happen. But I'm not going to rate it that high because of that. Because I was like, I don't know if I'll enjoy one, and like, or if I even want to watch it ever again. That's like one of those things I... Maybe the first fourth of the movie I'll watch and then never watch anything else except the end, which is also
that was a
pretty
good first fourth.
Good first fourth.
Like, great chemistry. Homegirl from Dear White People was like killing the game. I liked it.
They have so much chemistry. I was just like, wait, is this like a horror movie where I don't understand, is it romantic now? I'm confused. That's what I'm saying. He did a lot of genre bending too, you know? Shout out to these people who are genre bending, literally all of the horror and all of thriller. And it was intense, and it's a ride. Watch this movie, y'all. Do it for your own. Don't watch it with your family. Do not watch it
with
your mama.
Isn't it like
mama.
A Netflix original?
Yes, it is a Netflix original. It's kind of like a la Bird Box, except I think I enjoyed Bird Box more just because it was also just because Sandra Bullock was in it. They could have made that gay, but they, whatever.
I never saw Bird Box, confession time.
What? You never saw Bird Box?
I didn't give in to the hype.
I was going to watch it anyway. Sandra Bullock in anything is like, she's a wife. So she's amazing. I've watched almost every single Sandra Bullock there is. Anyways, back to this movie. I'm going to give it like 2.5 conchas.
Wow.
But like 2.5 conchas, like the really good ones. Like the ones made in like Durango, and like the ones they make outside. Like, it's a really good concha. Like, sugar is perfect, not dry, moist, you know, you eat it warm, they just made it. But yeah, it's 2.5 of those conchas, so it's maybe a little bit higher quality than another 2.5 conchas. But it's just I'm not into body horror, and that's what really killed it for me.
I feel that. I don't mind body horror as much, and I like something that can surprise me. So I got to say, half a cabecito on my part.
Okay. It only got those points taken off for all of the body horror. It was just, it got ridiculous. So I was okay with the first half. That second half, I was like, we really going here with, okay. All right. At least it subverted all of my, like, ideas. It subverted every trope. So shout out. You know what? Maybe I'm going to give it 3 really good conchas.
Okay, right on.
3, yeah.
You see what reflection does.
Yeah, I'm like, well, you know what? Let me give it another half. But it's really good, concha, and it goes with your cafecito, okay? It's just like, it's a really good 3. It's a good hearty pan dulces, 3 of them. But yeah, so, I don't know, dude. And I don't know what the other one, I forgot the other one you're going to do. So I'm excited to hear about this.
This is also a Netflix original.
Ooh.
So this is actually an anthology series. It's a horror series called Two Sentence Horror Story.
Ooh.
So each episode, as the name suggests, is based off of a two sentence horror story. And they'll give you like they'll give you like the first sentence at the beginning of the episode, and then they give you both sentences at the end of the episode. Because they don't want to give away the twist, of course. Most of these episodes have twists. So it's, what caught my interest was that it's literally marketed as diverse. It's marketed as a diverse series. It's in the description.
Oh, excuse me.
This is pretty rare outside of like low budget digital media. Like, you know, they do try to, there's stuff that tries to market towards certain demographics, but there's nothing that literally just like plops it in the description like that. So I was like, okay, we'll see. And what ended up happening as I watched this, because I binged it in like a day, it got better with every single episode. And these episodes are only 20 minutes long, so this is very bingeable. It's not like I went crazy. Mm. There's 8 episodes. So what most, if not all of these episodes do is what horror has always done throughout history. It reflects the anxieties of society. What's different is that who those anxieties belong to in this. Because in large budget, or maybe just in like horror film pre-Jordan Peele, like there are broader things that are addressed, like, you know, torture porn post 9/11 or found footage, which was probably about like our anxiety about technology, or the Purge series, which is about, you know, politics.
Yeah,
these are all really broad topics that horror talks about. These fears are really general, like for any like white person to relate to or understand. But Two Sentence goes into like these smaller scale fears and terrors, and I'm not gonna go deep into most of the episodes, but I'll go into the overarching themes, and there's probably gonna be like one or two that I really get into. Okay, so the first one is about toxic men, like specifically like the stalkery, murdery types.
Oh, hell no.
Yeah,
that's surreal. It's like that.
The plot twist in this is actually what kept me watching the show, because after that first episode, like the first episode wasn't my favorite. Mm-hmm. But it did avoid like a really negative message about moms, and it turned it around really quickly. So that's what, like, I was like, okay, let me just keep going. I went to episode 2. That one is about sexual assault. And maybe, oh, by the way, the first episode, what makes it diverse, I guess, is that the main character is an Asian woman. So anyways, moving on. Episode 2.
That's it's rare.
Sexual, yeah, it is. It's about sexual assault and maybe low-key like a comment on abortion. I'm not sure. I might be reaching there. Okay. It's similar to one that it also kind of covers toxic masculinity tones. And so does number 3, actually, a little bit. That one like fully dives into the topic of toxic and like pretty frankly like abusive men. Mm. And the trauma that they inflict even after they're gone. So those 3 I'm just going to be super general about. I'm going to keep it at that. Like, those were the general topics. Finally, I got to episode 4, which was my favorite episode. This one, I'm going to, like, really break it down. It's going to require a little bit of spoiling, but it's, like, it's, I feel like no matter how much I spoil this episode, it's still very much worth watching. Like, okay. You got to see it. So, in a nutshell, it's a home invasion story. That also kind of compares the lives of rich white families and immigrant families. Hmm. So at the beginning of this story, I felt seen as fuck. It's like, it opens with like a really busy, like Latina immigrant mom. She's talking to her children in like a very like adult tone. She's talking to them in Spanish, and they're replying in English, and
representation matters.
Yeah. You can tell that like they're used to taking care of themselves, these kids, but the mom is really adamant that like they know what to do when she's gone. She has these very specific instructions, and she's questioning them like crazy, right? Like really strict. She's like, you know, don't answer the door for strangers, not even the police. Where are the phone number is located?
Real.
Yeah, it gets really like into it. So whatever, she leaves the house, she leaves her kids behind with like their tia or something. She goes to this really rich neighborhood where there's like she's outside of the door of this house, and there's a white guy immediately looking at her all suspicious and shit, but she's just there to babysit. And there's an immediate, you can see an immediate difference of how the white parents are treating their leaving their kid at home. Like, it's not even a question of like what does the kid have to do, right? Because the babysitter's there to take care of that part of it, I guess. And it's not even like, I don't know, like they're not leaving their kid because they have to. Like, this mom had to leave their kids to go make money, but the white family, they just want to go have a night out or whatever. So that's another immediate noticeable difference. And they don't go over safety with the kid. They really only mention like, don't go out for a walk because there's been some recent break-ins, and the mom like almost forgets that like the kid even is even there at a moment. I feel she's just like, you know, like telling her to clean up the kitchen. I was like, seriously? On the other hand, the way that the immigrant mom, her name is, let me go back and find out real quick.
So it's like a comment, like a commentary on class, right? Like, that's fucking dope. You never get to see like little kids like being compared. Like, for us it's normal, but that's not something that's ever really shown on screen like that, like the difference between the two. We notice it because we don't have our lives set up that way, but to have it actually shown, that's different.
Like, once they leave, you see Araceli, she's the mom who's babysitting. The way that she treats her kids like adults, you know, it's pretty harsh. And then it's put in comparison to the way that she takes the time to play and, like, really kindly interact with the white kid. Her name is Gracie. And at first I was, like, a little off-put about it. Mm-hmm. I think I was probably, like, less off-put because you kind of realize that the kid, I think she has, like, sort of maybe, like, a mental disability, I'm not sure. But she, like, mostly speaks in, like, just a single word, and she reacts oddly to things and, like, things like that. Mm-hmm. So maybe, I think she might be autistic, I'm not sure. They don't ever make it clear. But she's just, like, very kind to this kid in comparison to the way that she teaches. She treats her like a kid, I guess, is the main point.
Instead of, like, a grown-ass.
Yeah, a whole adult.
A whole-ass adult.
So, I guess back to kind of, like, the horror vibe of it. So, it has kind of, like, a Purge-like feel. To me, this was the scariest of all the stories, because home invasions are kind of, like, the closest thing to something that I can see happening to me. And
yeah,
and then so then after this, there's kind of like a lot of action, so I'm not gonna like whatever get into all of that. That's actually, I'll leave that part unspoiled, but there's a lot of action, there's a home invasion, blah blah blah, and basically Araceli has to like fight them off and protect the kid, and I will say, like, spoiler alert, they survive.
Thank god. Yeah. I'll watch it.
So but moving on from that, we find out that these two women who attacked them, they were very young women. I think they're like 18. They were from that neighborhood, that same rich white neighborhood. And the only reason they did this attack, and they'd been doing several attacks, was to mix up the monotony of the neighborhood. Like, they were basically domestic terrorists that were just bored.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, hell no.
So after that happens and all that comes out, Araceli gets a lot of press attention, and she's made out to be this hero who survived and all this shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Seems great. Which, by the way, she finds this out on the news. She's like watching the news, then they're talking about it, and she's like, has one arm like in a, like, you know, like it's injured,
and
then the other hand, mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other hand is like ironing because we never fucking stop.
What the fuck?
And then her daughter is like, her daughter is like doing something. I think she's also like folding clothes or something. And then her son is like drawing. I'm like, that's representative right there. Like, the women are doing the cleaning and the kids just off in Wonderland. Anyway, Latina moms, make your son do chores challenge.
Yeah, please do. Like, that's what they actually scared of on Halloween is chores. Lavando.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a knock on the door at that point, and now we find out why she's so strict with the kids, like, because there's these modern day monsters, ICE, at the fucking door. And so it's like she survives all this really crazy shit that you guys are gonna see if you go watch it, get it, just to come home to face a real ass monster that people have to face every single day.
That's insane. I don't know if the law still stands, but the way it was before, that if you suffered through any kind of like domestic crazy shit, like home invasion or anything, any like violent thing ever happened to you, that actually fast tracked you. It used to be, I don't know what it is now, it used to fast track your citizenship. So if you survived anything traumatic and something where you had to like call the cops, or someone, there was a home invasion, like I have family members where they actually had a home invasion and they called the cops, and it actually, they went through this whole process because it was like a violent attack, and it fast tracked their citizenship.
That's interesting. I wonder if that would still apply under Trump's. Yeah,
I don't know if that was definitely during Obama, so I don't know what's going on now with that law, but that used to be the law.
Yeah, and that's really trash too, right? Like, you have to go through trauma in order to be worthy of it. Like, fuck
that's,
you.
It's bullshit, but it was, like, the least they could do. But that's why I don't know if that's the truth anymore. That could very possibly be the new truth, is that ICE would just knock on your door and they don't give a fuck.
Yeah, fuck, I mean, ICE didn't used to be ICE. It used to be La Migra or whatever.
La Migra, yeah. INS? Was it INS
some,
before?
Some shit like that, yeah.
When we were little, it was La Migra.
Yeah. That was just our nickname for it. I don't know what the official name was.
Yeah, we didn't. I think it was INS.
Probably. So yeah, I don't know either, but it's just, you know, I thought that this was the most dynamic and actually, like, really scary episode in the series.
Mm-mm. That's fucked up, dude, because that's, like, really real. I don't know how else to describe it. I'm at a loss of words. Just when anything ICE involved just gonna, like, freaks me out. That's super scary. That's for real scary.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
episode,
what would you give
five,
it?
Oh, well, I mean, there's still a few more episodes.
Oh, okay, go for it.
Yeah, that episode by as a standalone is like no cafecitos, right? Like, it's crazy. But episode five has its first queer pairing and their interracial couple too.
Okay. Two birds, one stone, I guess.
I guess, yeah. I mean, they're all diverse stories, right? So this super rich white kid has cancer, and he basically gets sent to, like, a super rich people's treatment center.
Mm-hmm.
Funnily enough, what this turns into reminds me of this episode of the Nick Kroll Show. So I don't know if you know what that is. It's like a skit show. But there's a specific skit, like a recurring skit called Publicity, where they find, like, deep web theories about the Illuminati being lizards.
What?
I'm not gonna spoil it, but this is like, yeah. But that's what it reminded me of a lot. And this whole episode in general, I'm just gonna, like, just generally wrap it up, but it's just kind of a comment on the heartlessness of the 1%. So I enjoyed this one too. This one's pretty good. Episode 6 is probably the most playful one that doesn't have, like, a huge whatever comment. It's just kind of, like, blending YouTube beauty guru culture with horror and the deep web.
It's they mix really, well. Really, that's a good mix.
It's really creative. Like, because and it throws you off. I like the twist in this a lot. But yeah, like I said, not very much of a comment socially. Episode 7. It's interesting. It's like about your general demons and voodoo story. It, like, brings in some Haitian history, which I thought was really neat. I won't spoil that one either. You guys just go check it out if you want to. Episode 8, I'll get into a little bit, because episode 8, it's like if the On My Block kids were younger and they lived in the projects instead of, like, the hood. And this was probably, like, my second favorite. It tells a story of, like, a singular monster, but it also calls out a lot of other monsters in the life of a child who has to grow up on the streets, basically, because their parents have to work all the time. And those monsters include, like, the police. Like, and there's a literal line in the show where they're, like, this young black boy says, like, the police see us as monsters. Like, we can't go to them.
Yeah.
You know, it calls out a lot of, like, people or monsters that they might be vulnerable to. And, of course, there's actual monsters in the story. But what I really like is, you know, the kids look out for each other. It's, like, two black kids and an Asian girl. Mm. And they look out for each other and they have each other's back. And I thought it was kind of sweet. It reminded me a lot of On My Block. Mm. But darker.
Yeah. a lot.
Yeah. Overall, like, the series, I recommend watching it a lot, especially episodes 4 and 8. They're singular episodes, so you don't have to watch all of these episodes. And I almost want to give it, like, no cafecitos. I would say, like, the first three are not my favorite, so I would say, like, I would probably knock it up to, like, a half a cafecito, because those are not so, like, entertaining to me. I'm also not a hetero, so maybe that's why. But yeah, I like this a lot. I don't think they were wrong to call themselves a diverse series. They were, like, every single episode was inclusive of one or more groups of, like, marginalized people.
That's crazy. And we actually got to be people. They weren't just fucking caricatures of themselves. Real plots, story development, character arcs. I don't know. Something should.
It's amazing.
What? We get diversity. We get horror. What?
Yeah. But that's it. Those were the four things that we're going to cover. And we didn't go as long as I thought we would. So I'm excited that we have a few more minutes to plug shit.
And I guess I do have a question for the listeners. What's y'all's favorite scary movie, if you do have one? Or if you're a little punk like me and you're scared of all scary movies, what's something you watch or enjoy, like Charlie Brown?
What do you tolerate out there?
Let us know, because I after I saw It as a child, I was kind of done. I was over it. I was like, I'm not doing this no more. This shit's scary.
I feel you.
So I don't know. What are y'all watching? What are y'all doing? What are y'all's traditions? I'm probably just gonna watch Tigers Are Afraid of the Dark or one of your two sentence horror stories.
Yeah, definitely watch that. Episode 4. That shit's great.
And watch episode 4. I need some of that in my life. That's about as scary as I can do. It's like a thriller.
Oh yeah. So I guess before we get into like our Patreon shout outs for the month, just letting you guys know to follow us at CYC Podcast, and especially on our Instagram bio, we have all like our links up there now. So you can find our merch, you can find our Patreon, you can find our website, you can find whatever you need to find. Our email's there too if you want to send us a letter. We're down to talk about other stuff in the future.
Yeah, let us know. If there's anything you guys want us to cover, let us know. Portrait of a Lady on Fire is coming up. I cannot wait to fucking watch it.
There's so much stuff coming up, dude.
I'm so hyped, dude.
Yeah. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks. As you know, we're currently every other week. So you'll be hearing from a really, really cool filmmaker in LA at that point. So now we'll get into our Patreon shout outs.
Yeah, so I guess everyone else can tune out, but shout out to our Patreon people. We love y'all. If it wasn't for y'all, we'd be hella broke and struggling, but now we're just like getting by. It's nice. So I want to shout out Denzel. I love you. Aaron actually recommended the La Llorona story. So shout out to Aaron. Because of him, I had something to cover that I wasn't scared of watching. Shout out to Glow. Shout out to all Scorpios this month. It's her birthday. So shout out to Glow. Shout out to Vicky. Shout out to Jake, who just had a birthday, from Juice with Jake and Jake. Scorpio gang, I love y'all forever. Rassi is also a Scorpio. He is also a Patreon supporter.
Jesus, are you serious?
Yeah, it's 1, 2, 3, 4. Four Scorpio Patreon supporters. We love you. Rossi's on vacation right now. I love you. Shout out to Heather. You're the best. Thank you so much for supporting. You're the shit. Rosaura, I see you. Your fucking looks are everything. Shout out to my brother. Shout out to our brother, Beto. shout out to Marimar. I didn't know she had a shirt. Thank you so much for buying the merch. That means everything to us. Shout out Patreon people. I love all of y'all. I'm super grateful for all my Scorpio gang. So yeah, that's Vicky, Glow, and Jake, and Rossi. That's 4. Wow, love y'all.
Nice. So also shout out to Marisa for another month of supporting us and for hanging out with me and volunteering to go to Vegas with me soon. So thanks for that in advance. Shout out to Mireya, who's like sporting all the CYC merch. Her and her sister, like gang gang out here. Shout out to Alejandra for another month of support. Thank you so much. Kristen, thank you for supporting. Alicia, OG, just been supporting from the beginning. Our quiet donator. you're the best. Michelle, thank you so much for another month. Noelle, we miss you. We know that you're like working on that new podcast.
We're excited.
Elena, I see you out there always doing some awesome community-based stuff. And Laura Cam, thank you for supporting. Feel free to choose a tier so you can get some rewards, so you can like hear some extra episodes that we have. So you get 3 episodes a month instead of 2. And thank all of you again. If you guys want to join patreon.com/CYC podcast, we try to treat our Patreon supporters right. They're all our homies now, you know?
Yeah. And you know who I forgot? How could I forget? I forgot Chrissy. Chrissy. I'm so sorry, Chrissy. We love you.
We do.
You're like, your looks, your belt buckles, your Texas looks. I mean, I stan. So I can't believe I forgot you. I love you. You're the best. Honestly. I see you and your wife out here. Y'all be stunning. We see you. We see you. They got a farm, man. Okay, anyways.
Wild jealous.
Our Patreon supporters is just so, they're just like really fucking cool people. So I'm hype.
Agreed. All right, guys. Well, thank you for listening to our third Halloween episode. And this is my favorite shit. So let us know what you think, whether in a DM or an at or wherever you want. Just let us know. And if you watch them, let us know. Do some live reactions or something.
Let us know what y'all think. Or if y'all hate that shit, let us know too. Actually, I'm interested to know. But yeah, happy Halloween, y'all. Have a happy Scorpio season. Be blessed.
Feliz Dia de los Muertos. All that.
If you celebrate that, yeah. Happy Dia de los Difuntos también. But yeah.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.